the second century, paragraphs 21 through 30. Number 21. When Amasis, the king of Egypt, sent to the wise men of Greece to know quid pulcherrimum, upon due and mature consideration they answered, the world. The world certainly being so beautiful that nothing visible is capable of more. Were we to see it only once, the first appearance would amaze us, but being daily seen, we observe it not. Ancient philosophers have thought God to be the soul of the world. Since, therefore, this visible world is the body of God, not his natural body, but which he hath assumed, let us see how glorious his wisdom is in manifesting himself thereby. It hath not only represented his infinity and eternity, which we thought impossible to be represented by a body, but his beauty also, his wisdom, goodness, power, life, and glory, his righteousness, love, and blessedness, all which out of a plentiful treasury may be taken and collected out of this world. First, his infinity, for the dimensions of the world are unsearchable. An infinite wall is a poor thing to express his infinity. A narrow, endless length is nothing, might be, and if it were, unprofitable. But the world is round and endlessly unsearchable every way. What astronomer, what mathematician, what philosopher did ever comprehend the measures of the world? The very earth alone, being round and globous, is limited. It hath neither walls nor precipices, nor bounds nor borders. A man may lose himself in the midst of nations and kingdoms, and yet it is but a center compared to the universe. The distance of the sun, the altitude of the stars, the wideness of the heavens, on every side passes the reach of sight and search of the understanding, and whether it be infinite or no, we cannot tell. The eternity of God is so apparent in it that the wisest of philosophers thought the world eternal. We come into it, leave it, as if it had neither beginning nor ending. Concerning its beauty, I need say nothing. No man can turn unto it, but must be ravished with its appearance. Only thus much, since these things are so beautiful, how much more beautiful is the author of them, which was the note and observation of the wise man of the book of blank with an asterisk. There is a blank here in the original manuscript. Continued. But the beauty of God is invisible. It is all wisdom, goodness, life and love, power, glory, blessedness, etc. How, therefore, shall these be expressed in a material world? His wisdom is expressed in manifesting his infinity in such a commodious manner. He hath made a penetrable body in which we may stand, to wit, the air, and see the heavens and the regions of the earth at wonderful distances. His goodness is manifest in making that beauty so delightful and its variety so profitable. The air to breathe in, the sea for moisture, the earth for fertility, the heavens for influences, the sun for productions, the stars and trees wherewith it is adorned for innumerable uses. Again, his goodness is seen, in the end to which he guideth all this profitableness in making it serviceable to supply our wants and delight our senses, to inflame us with his love and make us amiable before him and delighters in his blessedness. God, having not only showed us his simple infinity in an endless wall, but in such an illustrious manner, by an infant variety, that he has drowned our understanding in a multitude of wonders, transported us with delights, and enriched us with innumerable diversities of joys and pleasures. The very greatness of our felicity convinces us there is a God. Number 22. His power is evident by upholding it all. But how shall his life appear in that which is dead? Life is the root of activity and motion. Did I see a man sitting in a chair as long as he was quiet? I could not tell, but his body was inanimate. But if he stirred, if he moved his legs or stretched forth his arms, if he breathed or twinkled with his eyes, I could easily tell he had a soul within him. Motion being a far greater evidence of life than all lineaments whatsoever. Colors and features may be in a dead picture, but motion is always attended with life. What shall I think, therefore, when the winds blow, the seas roar, the waters flow, the vapors ascend, the clouds fly, the drops of rain fall, The stars march forth in armies. The sun runneth swiftly round about the world. Can all these things move so without a life or spring of motion? But the wheels and watches move, and so doth the hand that pointeth out the figures, this being a motion of dead things. Therefore hath God created living ones, that by lively motions and sensible desires we might be sensible of a deity. They breathe, they see, they feel, they grow, they flourish, they know, they love. Oh, what a world of evidences! We are lost in abysses. We now are absorbed in wonders and swallowed up of demonstrations. Beasts, fowls, fishes, teaching and evidencing the glory of their Creator. But these by an endless generation might succeed each other from everlasting. Let us therefore survey their order, and see by that whether we can discern their governor. The sun and moon and stars shine, and by shining minister influences to herbs and flowers. These grow and feed the cattle. The seas also and springs minister unto them, as they do unto fowls and fishes. All which are subservient unto man, a more noble creature endued with understanding to admire his Creator, who, being King and Lord of this world, is able to prize all in a reflexive manner, and render praises for all with joy, living blessedly in the fruition of them. None can question the being of a deity, but one that is ignorant of man's excellencies and the glory of his dominion over all the creatures. Number 23. Above all, man discovers the glory of God, who, being himself immortal, is the divinest creature. He hath a dominion over all the rest, and God over him. By him, the fountain of all these things is the end of them, for he can return to their author deserved praises. Senses cannot resemble that which they cannot apprehend, nor express that which they cannot resemble, but in a shady manner. But man is made in the image of God, and therefore is a mirror and representative of him. And therefore in himself he may see God, which is his glory and felicity. His thoughts and desires can run out to everlasting. His love can extend to all objects. His understanding is an endless light, and can infinitely be present in all places, and see and examine all beings, survey the reasons, surmount the greatness, exceed the strength, contemplate the beauty, enjoy the benefit, and reign over all it sees and enjoys like the eternal Godhead. Here is an invisible power, an indivisible omnipresence, a spiritual supremacy, an inward, hidden, unknown being greater than all, a sublime and sovereign creature, meet to live in communion with God in the fruition of them. Number 24. That you are a man should fill you with joys and make you to overflow with praises, the privilege of your nature being infinitely infinite, and that the world serves you in this fathomless manner, exhibiting the deity and ministering to your blessedness, ought daily to transport you with a blessed vision into ravishments and ecstasies. What knowledge could you have had of God by an unprofitable wall, though endless and infinite? For though, as things now are, nothing can be, but it exhibits a deity. As the Apostle saith, by things that are seen, the invisible things of God are manifested, even his power and Godhead, because everything is a demonstration of his goodness and power. By its existence and the end to which it is guided, yet an endless wall could never manifest his being, were it present with you alone, for it would deny that infinity by its unprofitableness, which it shows by its endlessness. The true exemplar of God's infinity is that of your understanding, which is a lively pattern and idea of it. It excludeth nothing and containeth all things, being a power that permits all objects to be, and is able to enjoy them. Here is a profitable endlessness of infinite value, because without it infinite joys and blessings would be lost, which by it are enjoyed. How great doth God appear in wisely preparing such an understanding to enjoy his creatures, such an endless, invisible, and mysterious receiver! And how blessed and divine are you, to whom God hath not only simply appeared, but whom he hath exalted as an immortal king among all his creatures. Number 25. You are able to see his righteousness and blessedness and glory, which are invisible, yea, which is infinitely more, to resemble and attain them, to express them in yourself, and join them in the similitude of them. No beast can see what righteousness is, nor is any brute capable of imitating it. You are, being admitted into the fellowship and order of angels, which have neither eyes nor ears, and yet see and understand things, which are infinitely higher than the sphere of senses. You are able to discern that in all these things he is love to you, and that love is a fountain of infinite benefits, and doth all that is possible for its beloved object. It endlessly desires to delight itself, and its delight is to magnify its beloved. You are able to see the righteousness of love in this, for in doing the best of all possible things, it is right wise to itself and to all other beings, right wise to itself and glorifying itself in the best of manners, and to all other things in making them most excellent, right wise in itself in preparing for itself the best of treasures, and to its object in like manner in making its beloved the most blessed, right wise unto itself in satisfying itself in its infinite desire of becoming delightful to its object, in preparing for itself infinite pleasures, and in making for itself the most delightful object that can possibly be made, right wise unto you in making you that object, and providing all the treasures of itself for you, and making itself infinitely joyous and delightful to you. Nothing is so righteous or right wise as love, for by making itself glorious it becomes infinite, and by loving its object infinitely it enables itself to delight infinitely in its object's happiness, and wisely prepares infinite treasures, right wisely thereby at once enriching itself and its object, so that you are able evidently to discern that God is love, and therein to contemplate all his perfections. Number 26. You are able therein to see the infinite glory of your high estate, for if God is love, and love be so restless a principle in exalting its object, and so secure that it always promotes and glorifies and exalts itself thereby, where will there be any bounds in your exaltation? How dreadful, how amiable, how blessed, how great, how unsearchable, how incomprehensible must you be in your true, real, inward happiness! The object of love is infinitely exalted. Love is infinitely delightful to its object. God, by all his works, manifests himself to be love, and you, being the end of them, are evidently its object. Go where you will, here alone shall you find your happiness. Contemplate, therefore, the works of God, for they serve you not only in manifesting him, but in making you to know yourself and your blessedness. Number 27. As love is righteous in glorifying itself and making its object blessed, so it is in all its dealings and dispensations toward it. Having made it amiable, it cannot but love it, which it is righteous in doing, for to love what is lovely is a righteous thing. To make it infinitely amiable is a righteous thing to infinite love, and to love it infinitely, being infinitely amiable. For thereby infinite love does right to itself in its measure, yea, to itself in its object. To tender what is amiable is a righteous thing. To hurt it is evil. Love, therefore, is infinitely righteous in being infinitely tender of its object's welfare, and in hating infinitely the sin of hurting it. It is righteous in commanding others to promote it, and in punishing those that injure or offend it. And thus have you a gate, in the prospect even of this world, whereby you may see into God's kingdom. For by his works you see that God is love, and by his love see the nature of all righteousness opened and unfolded, with the ground and foundations of rewards and punishments. Number 28. But God, being infinite, is infinitely righteous. His love, therefore, is righteous to itself and all its works as well as its object. To itself it requiring that it be infinitely esteemed, of which it is infinitely desirous. The condemners of it, therefore, it infinitely punishes. To its works not only in making them the best that may be, but in requiring an exact and due esteem from the enjoyers of them. Is not love jealous of the honor of its gifts? Does not a contempt of its presence rebound upon itself? The world, therefore, serves you abundantly in teaching you your duty. They daily cry in a living manner, with a silent and yet most loud voice, "We are all his gifts. We are tokens and presents of his love. You must therefore esteem us according to the beauty and worth that is in us, and the love from whence we came, which to do is certainly the most blessed thing in all worlds, and not to do it is most wicked and most miserable." Number 29. Love further manifests itself in joining righteousness and blessedness together, for wherein can love appear more than in making our duty most blessed, which here is done by making obedience the fruition of one's blessedness. God cannot, therefore, but be infinitely provoked when we break his laws, not only because love is jealous and cruel as the grave, but because also our duty, being so amiable, which it imposes on us with infinite obligations, they are all despised. His love itself, our most beautiful duty, and all its obligations, so that his wrath must be very heavy, and his indignation infinite. Number 30. Yet love can forbear, and love can forgive, though it can never be reconciled to an unlovely object. And hence it is that though you have so little considered the works of God and prized his love, yet you are permitted to live, and live at ease, and enjoy your pleasure. But love can never be reconciled to an unlovely object, and you are infinitely unlovely by despising God and his love so long. Yea, one act only of despite, done to the smallest creature, made you infinitely deformed. What shall become of you, therefore, since God cannot be reconciled to an ugly object? Verily, you are in danger of perishing eternally. He cannot indeed be reconciled to an ugly object, as it is ugly, but as it is capable of being otherwise, he may. He can never, therefore, be reconciled to your sin, because sin itself is incapable of being altered. But he may be reconciled to your person, because that may be restored, and, which is an infinite wonder, to greater beauty and splendor than before.